Hey Watchers, today's episode is a deep dive into what is arguably the best known work of legendary director George Romero. Known as the godfather of zombie movies, he was also a guerrilla filmmaker to the core. So hijack a helicopter and load up on ammo, because it's time for 1978's apocalyptic horror classic, Dawn of the Dead. Welcome to the Midnight Watch Podcast, the show where we discuss classic, cult, and modern classic movies.
We're your hosts, Jeremy and Josh Baruto, and we review movies that are at least 10 years old. Fair warning, we're big on spoilers here, straight from the get-go.
We rate these movies in four categories. Number one, the level of impact and success it had when it was released. Number two, how relevant is it today? Number three, our own personal enjoyment of this movie. And number four, is it a Midnight Watch?
What is a Midnight Watch? It's a film which completely captures your attention, drawing you in. No matter what time or what part you start watching the movie, you have to finish it.
All right, Dawn of the Dead, 1978. Today we got a guest on the show. This is Dave Matthews, our brother-in-law, zombie expert extraordinaire. He actually really introduced me to the zombie genre completely. And so like I watched those, started watching that stuff when I was like, I don't know, 13, 14, something like that. Was I younger? I might've been younger, Dave. I don't remember.
Yeah, that's a good question. I don't have the number right off the top of my head.
that's probably pretty close. Cause I think you were just about getting into high school, I think, when Dave was coming into the family.
Yeah. Into the fold. That's all right.
We're
that's
not a, awesome. Not a cult. Not a cult.
Not yet. So still got to get the taxes. Okay. Anyways. So yeah, no, Dave, we really wanted you on the show though, because Dawn of the Dead is like become a really special movie to me and to Josh. And it's a landmark film in so many different ways. And so I was definitely, we were talking about it, kicking it about for a while. And I know last year I talked to you about it and I'm so glad that you're on the show, but we get to jump into this. I'm just going to drop some info real quick on the beginning of this. And then we'll talk about the first time we watched this. So that'll be good. This is directed by George Romero. The screenplay by George Romero. The score is by The Goblins and Dario Argento. And the budget is a little tricky here. So it wasn't originally reported at $1.5 million, but Richard Rubenstein, the producer, recently had said that it actually that was like dramatically inflated so that they could get international backers, and so the actual budget was closer to $500,000, which is ridiculously cheap for the scope of a movie. Wow. And then yeah, this has got a box office of $66 million, so definitely a home run. This is George Romero's biggest movie, and I think it's his best movie for sure, but he does have other solid flicks. But it is right. We got the cast of David Emge. I don't know how to say that. Ken Foray, Scott Reiniger, and Galen Ross. There's some other people in it, but those are the main people that we care about. So
Did you say Ken Foray?
I said Foray. I literally heard this was listening to another podcast and they said Ken Foray, and I was like, okay, I'll go with that.
There you go. I think it's French or something. Yeah.
Is it
French? Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
He looks French. I don't know. So let's jump into it. Yeah, Josh, when's the first time you watched this movie?
So the first time, I think it was probably about 10 years ago or so. I don't know. Actually, I take that back. It might have been earlier when you had first seen it. You might have showed me some clips, Jeremy, back at mom and dad's house. But as far as like watching most of the movie, it was about 10 years ago, I think, when I had that my movie club back in Sacramento. And nice. Come to find out, I actually had not seen I do remember that. I'm pretty sure I remember the first part of the movie, but as I was watching it to do it for the podcast, after the main part in the mall, like when the bikers and everyone showed up, I don't remember any of that. So either I completely forgot.
The whole biker scene?
Yeah, dude. I don't know how I... So, but yet I've seen like the mall part and, you know, the first part of the movie probably two or three times. And I just, yeah, I don't know if I just happened to always step out when that next, you know, the last quarter of the movie came on or what? But I was like, oh man, I don't remember any of this.
Dude, I thought they showed up a lot earlier actually. And so I was like waiting for them to show up and I was like, this is actually like the end of the movie. So, okay.
Right.
Yeah. Dave, when did you see this?
I think the first time I saw this movie was in 1997. Some friends and I rented a VHS tape and we hung out. I think probably cracked some beers and watched this some probably Saturday afternoon.
The first time I watched this was, I think I watched it at your house and I was like slowly working back. So I watched 28 Days Later and then I watched the remake Dawn of the Dead, which I wasn't really into horror movies. So I was like slowly getting more and more used to horror movies. And then I finally watched this one. And this movie like scared the crap out of me when I saw it. Like the remake was cool, but the actual old one is like way, way more intense. And I think the old school gore just got me like way worse than the modern day style gore.
Yeah, I know. I definitely got more weirded out by old school gore when I was younger. Though I'm glad you said that, Jeremy, because I remember I watched the remake, the Zack Snyder one, with you. And I also was not really into horror movies at all back then. And you were like, man, it's kind of like it's more like an action movie with zombies in it. I mean, not that I hadn't seen horror movies. I mean, I'm pretty sure I'd already seen 28 Days Later, but I just knew that, you know, Dawn of the Dead was like the zombie movie. And then so the remake, I just assumed was going to be super intense or whatever. And not really my cup of tea, but I remember enjoying it. And then when I saw the original later, I think I was kind of taken back because it was fun. It was, mm-hmm. It's such a fun movie. And like, and the zombies in the mall, I mean, it's hilarious. I'm just like, this is, wow. I was not expecting that.
Right. And the much different flavor. The new one, of course, was with I think the new one was the first one with running zombies. If that's correct. Cause technically
out of the Romero series, I think that was.
Okay. Cause I was gonna say 28 Days Later is technically not a zombie film, but which is kind of funny though. I did see in the original Dawn of the two kids that come out are the only people in the Romero series that actually run, which is pretty funny. Oh, Everybody else does the slow shuffle, but they ran at Ken. And I thought that was hilarious.
You're right.
Yeah. So Dave, tell us, go ahead.
Random fun fact. I guess those are Tom Savini's like niece and nephew or something.
Yeah. I read that. I was like,
sorry, you were probably going to say that later.
No, that's fine. Yeah. Tom Savini is the special effects artist from this. He always reminds me of Uncle Tom. So I was like, Uncle Tom Savini, we have an uncle whose name is Tom and he looks like Tom Savini, but it's pretty crazy though. I don't think he's a fan of Tom Savini though. But
probably not.
Yeah. So Dave, tell us about like what this movie like means to you and why you still love this movie after all these years.
So this movie sort of got me started on what would wind up being quite an obsession. This movie was really cool because it was like the common man adventure type situation that could easily happen. And for the longest time, I thought that would be like super fun. You know, you assemble a group of friends, you get used to working with each other, and all of a sudden you're like an unstoppable force with nothing but video game type engagements, right?
Right.
Yep, totally. But and you know, I had the chance to be a featured zombie in a zombie movie with my wife also. The History Channel's I'm blanking on the name, but it started an obsession. It continues and it's a lot of fun.
That's awesome. Yeah, I know that this movie definitely kicked off so many different things. Like it's funny, you watch it now and it does not a lot of it really stands out because it's been copied so much. But when this movie came out, though, it was like one of the goriest films ever made. It was completely just totally different than anything that had been seen before. Josh, let's jump into that synopsis. And then once we get done with that, we'll jump back into the movie.
Yeah, because I think we got a lot to talk about here.
Yes, okay. We do.
Thank you, Wikipedia. And here we go. The United States is devastated by a mysterious phenomenon that reanimates recently deceased human beings as flesh-eating zombies. 3 weeks into the crisis, it has been reported that millions of people have died and reanimated. Despite the government's best efforts, social order is collapsing. Rural communities and the National Guard have been effective in fighting the zombie hordes in open country, but urban centers are helplessly overrun. At WGON-TV, a television studio in Philadelphia, traffic reporter Stephen Andrews and his pregnant girlfriend, producer Fran Parker, are planning to steal the station's helicopter to escape the city. Across town, police SWAT officer Roger DeMarco and his team raid a low-income housing project where the mostly Black and Latino tenants are defying the martial law, delivering their dead to the National Guard. The raid quickly descends into chaos when armed residents engage in a shootout with the officers. Roger attempts to restrain Wooly, a brutal and racist trooper, after he maniacally kills several unarmed civilians. Wooly is shot dead by an officer from another unit, Peter Washington. As a SWAT team dispatch the reanimated dead that have injured or killed several tenants, a young officer commits suicide amid the carnage. Forming an alliance with Peter, Roger suggests that they desert and join up with Stephen, who is his friend. They are informed by an elderly priest about a group of zombies in the basement, which they assist in the grim job of eliminating. Later that night, Roger and Peter rendezvous with Fran and Stephen at a police dock and then leave Philadelphia in the helicopter. Following some close calls while stopping for fuel, the group comes across a shopping mall, which they make as their sanctuary. They devise an operation to block the mall entrances with trucks to keep the undead from penetrating. Peter and Stephen also cover the access to the stairwell. During the operation, Roger has a near-death experience and becomes reckless as a result. He is soon bitten by the zombies. After clearing the mall's interior of zombies, the four enjoy a hedonistic lifestyle with all the goods available to them, furnishing their makeshift apartment with the mall's many commodities. Roger eventually succumbs to his wounds and dies. He is shot by Peter upon reanimating. Sometime later, all emergency broadcast transmissions cease, suggesting that the government has collapsed and a large portion of the population has become zombies. Fran, now showing her pregnancy, presses to leave the mall. Supplies are loaded into the helicopter, and Stephen gives her flying lessons. Having seen the helicopter, a nomadic biker gang arrive to conquer the mall, destroying the barriers and allowing hundreds of zombies back inside. The looting bikers enrage Stephen, and he triggers a gun battle with them. Stephen is shot before being bitten by the undead. As some of the bikers are eaten by zombies, the rest retreat with their stolen goods. Stephen, now reanimated, acts on a remnant of his memories and tears down the wall covering the stairwell and leads the undead to Fran and Peter. Peter kills Stephen while Francine escapes to the roof. Peter locks himself in a room and contemplates suicide, but when the zombies burst in, he has a change of heart and fights his way up to the roof, where he joins Francine. The two of them fly away in the helicopter to an uncertain future, leaving the now abandoned mall to be overrun by the zombie horde.
Perfect. That's what I'm talking about. That was good.
That's what we got.
That's what we got. All right. Yeah. So I got to say, first off, I love how this movie starts with a shag carpet on the wall. That's what I'm talking about. Yep. It's like immediately it's like 70s.
And right.
It's unique because when it like pulls away and you think like you're staring at the ground, but then like she's standing next to it. And I was just like, oh, that's freaking cool. I love that. I thought that was awesome. And also I did check out the trailer today, the original trailer. Have you guys seen that?
Yes.
Yeah, so, not in a while, but yeah.
Did you see at the end, since George Romero didn't want to get the film rated X because it was going to be rated X, but he didn't want that because of the stigma about hardcore pornography being rated X. So at the end of the trailer, it says there is no explicit sex in this picture. However, there are scenes of violence which may be considered shocking. No one under 17 will be admitted. So I thought that was pretty intense. So he basically, you couldn't do this nowadays, but he was able to release the film unrated so that more people would go see it.
Right.
Which is pretty freaking legit.
And right.
Dude, the beginning of this movie is tense, like straight out of the gate. I think it's the first 15 minutes of this film is probably the most tense. And then it like kind of calms down. I think partly though is you get used to what's going on. But
well, part of it, I think, is the soundtrack. You got that real pulsing bass and like bass drum. It's not very technical. There's not a lot going on, but there's enough that it just totally builds that dread inside you. And then the panic is rising in the studio as they're trying to figure out what's going on. And it definitely swirls around, but you're right. I think that's probably the most intense part of the movie.
Yeah. Dave, what was your first thoughts when you first started watching this movie?
My initial thought was also definitely enjoying that shag carpet rug on the wall, but a quick pan over George Romero and his daughter at the desk in the room with Franz. Yeah. That was pretty cool.
Yeah. Oh,
that was awesome.
I love how Didi, I mean, you guys would probably know more than me. I don't think he's one of those guys that had a cameo in all of his movies. Do you know?
I don't believe so.
I don't know. I know he had almost three cameos in this movie. One of them was cut. He was a zombie Santa, apparently. And
no way.
Yeah. And then that scene didn't make it into the movie, apparently. But
is it in the uncut version? You know,
I think it's they left it on the floor, apparently.
Okay.
Because the extended version has an extra like 15 minutes of footage, but I have to watch it again, though. It's weird. Each version of it, totally different feel. Like, For like Dario Argento, he helped produce the film. And so he had international rights. So he was making all the money internationally. So he helped George Romero make the film, and then he edited his own version of it. And that's the European version is the version that has the complete Goblin soundtrack versus the American one is like some of it's goblins. And then some of it's like really terrible stock music that like when they're like, hey, let's turn the music on at the mall, and it's like the dumbest song you ever heard. I don't even know if it even counts as a song, barely. but anyways, yeah, so that movie, though, like Dario cut out a lot of the funny stuff, and it's a lot scarier, though. But George Romero, I like how, like you said earlier, Josh, it's definitely like it's fun, like it's terrifying in some parts, but then it's funny. And you got to have consistent different emotional changes in order to keep the viewer engaged.
Well, that's one thing, Dave, have you watched much Dario Argento?
Not outside of this engagement, no.
Okay. So he, in my opinion, he tends to be very serious and it's very focused and it's very intense and he doesn't let up from the beginning to the end. So I could see why his idea of this movie would have been this intense, nonstop, just not necessarily a race to the finish, but just no escape, you know?
Right. Especially like with Suspiria and Deep Red, how they just start off intense and then it just keeps going. Yeah. Which both of those Goblin soundtrack, dude, Dave, well, once again, thank you. Like the Goblins, man, I love that sound, but just the music that they do, it gets stuck in my head, and it used to freak me out from Suspiria, but now I enjoy it. It's awesome, man. Yeah. So Dave, what are some parts about this movie that you dig?
I really liked the whole part of the, I believe it's JCPenney's, where they use the store to gain attention to the zombies on one floor to escape through the other one. And so there were a lot of stores like that when I was growing up in Ohio, a lot of malls that sort of had that same feel. And I think that may have been one of the things that was like really appealing about this movie was it has that sort of nostalgic, like new retail feel where like in 78, like the shopping mall, they say at the beginning of the movie, still a really rare thing. And so it was cool to be able to have experienced it sort of as a lad in the 80s myself, but that really stood out.
That's awesome. I was thinking about the malls, around where I grew up, and we'd be dead in like 2 weeks because you run out of food. Like this mall was like freaking awesome, which I know that they shot the gun scene part, or the gun shop was not in the mall. And so they shot that out and then had to put that in later. So it looked like it was in the mall. But one thing I wanted to know is like, where did they get the morphine that they're giving to Roger later in the movie? I'm like, what department store has morphine?
I mean, what? Honestly, I think that, well, here's one thing. They had their police gear and stuff with them, so maybe they could have taken it on the helicopter initially. But also, I think, and I could be wrong, please somebody shout out how far off I am on this, but I think first aid kits back in the day had stuff like morphine in it. I think there was some heavy hitters in there that maybe not like your off the shelf, you know, home first aid kit, but like in a mall. I mean, they probably had a first aid station. And I wouldn't doubt that they may have had, you know, some what we would consider really restricted medication.
Yeah, something I noticed this time watching it through is on YouTube, there's a basically a Blu-ray rip. And I noticed for the first time, because of that clarity, you see that there's a bunch of civil defense gear in the top of the mall. Like when they first land the chopper on the roof and they run and they're looking through the skylights and stuff, they see those boxes. That's where the food, the spam and everything, that was all there. Water was all there. I think it was like emergency supplies, maybe even some medical stuff.
See, that That makes sense. Yeah. Cause I need to get this movie on Blu-ray. I have the ultimate edition, but I know the Blu-ray hasn't been released really in America because Rubenstein has the rights for distributing, and that's why you can't find it anywhere online because he wants to make a 3D version of it. He says he already spent like $6 million in making a 3D version that has not been released. And I don't know if it's ever going to be released, but
I
would love
to see you want to see a 3D version of this movie, you think? How is that even going to work?
Not really, but it's, honestly, if it comes back into theaters, I'm going to see it any way I can.
Well, sure. That would be really fun to see it.
Yeah, I think Rubenstein must have been a fan of the World War Z 3D remake with Brad Pitt.
Apparently. Right. Dude, I couldn't even finish that movie. I'm not going to lie. I tried to. And there were parts of it that I thought were cool. But then like, okay, so I know this movie, there's people do some dumb stuff. Like to this day, anytime I see a blood pressure machine, I think of this movie. the guy puts his arm through it and then the zombies eat him. Like, it's so dumb, but it's so funny. And like, you remember that. And World War Z, the people were stupid in that, but like not in an entertaining way. But
Before we get too far into that one, I think part of the problem with World War Z was there was so much hype built up on it. Then they did the reshoot. So they pushed it back and they're just dumping so much money into it. And again, so much hype and it just didn't deliver. I saw it later after I had heard it was terrible. So the bar was low for me. And then I was like, it's actually not a bad movie, and I never read the book. I think both you guys read the book, right?
Right.
I heard the audiobook. That was really good.
If they just
whole Hollywood cast,
they just made the book into a movie, it would have been way better.
That's right.
Yeah, but Max Brooks was good. Okay. Anyways, oh, one thing I thought, David, I think you were telling me about this originally, but there's two really funny scenes in this movie. Like when they first go to get into the helicopter and the guy's like, "Hey, you got any cigarettes?"
And he's like, and they're all nope.
Passing out. Yeah, and they're all smoking oak later.
And then they all light up as soon as they take off. But
I love that scene. You telling me about this scene where he's like, "We're going to make it to the islands." And he's like, "Which island?" "Any island." And then he's like, "Where are you guys going?" He's like, "Straight up." Right. And he's like, "Okay." I just remember you were talking to me about that. And I thought that was freaking hilarious. And then like you were saying, I can't remember the way you phrased it. It was so funny. Cause once I finally saw it in the movie, I like totally busted up. It was when Steven like takes a swing at that guy with the mallet. And like, I don't know if he's trying to hit him or tackle him.
Right.
I think it was a very unique style of judo or aikido where it's just all about body movement, locking up under his shoulder, down they go.
However it was, apparently it worked. So
that's right.
Right.
Oh man. I've got a bunch of different trivia that we can jump into at any time. I don't want to hog the mic too much. So you guys go ahead and keep talking right now.
Yeah, so I guess there have been fan edits of Dawn of the Dead as well to encompass some of the different sort of themes and ideas that you guys were talking about earlier with different people's vision of it. And it was interesting because watching through that fan edit, you can tell they've had to use additional music to sort of like fill in what would otherwise have been gaps. But the music really ratchets up the terror factor in this movie. It's a classic awesome soundtrack.
Mm-hmm. Yes it does. Is that on YouTube?
The fan edit is on YouTube. Yeah.
Oh, that's fantastic. I had the gonk as my ringtone for like years. Like that was just awesome. Shaun of the Dead did such a good job of like taking little pieces from it and mixing it in the soundtrack. Oh man, it was awesome. Josh, what do you got?
I owe it all to you, Dave, for getting me a bootleg copy of Shaun of the Dead back when that came out. And I mean, I swear to this day, I think that's seriously in my top five movies. I just cannot get away from that. I know people people might argue that Hot Fuzz in the Coronado, you know, trilogy is the best one. And I do love that one, but there's just something about Shaun of the Dead. And I think in a weird way, it was very much even more of a gateway movie to get me into horror. Even though it's a comedy, it's such a straight tribute to Dawn of the Dead and just, you know, zombie movies in general. Just so much respect for it. It's not making fun of that stuff. It definitely got me hooked on, you know, just going from there. Thank you, sir. Thank you.
Happy to help. Yeah. One of the coolest things about the zombie genre is the ability for like anyone to be able to write a story about it. Like, even if you were like writing in like an existing work, like, you know, where if you were alive in the 70s and your 20s and stuff, like, where would you have gone during the zombie apocalypse? And then, you know, come up with stories, and there's all sorts of cool, like, online communities and stuff where it's like ongoing fiction, and you can like jump in and write parts yourself, and then other people will collaborate off of what you put down. And it's a really cool community.
I agree. Yeah. And you're right. What you said earlier about it's kind of the everyman genre. I mean, you don't have to be Van Helsing or some sort of supernatural tough guy or whatnot, or have some kind of, supernatural powers or anything to defeat it, or skills. It's just survival. And you either get good as you go along, or maybe you're just lucky the whole time, or, you know, maybe you do dominate. But you're right. It kind of fits every part of life, no matter where you're at and where you are in life. It kind of works for that. So it is a cool genre especially when you look at it that way.
Right. And it's funny.
Well said.
Unfortunately, that with this genre too, though, I mean, it's kind of with a vampire genre, somewhat not as bad though. This, you get really good zombie movies, and you can get really bad zombie movies too,
for sure.
So, but also too, the thing that's interesting with the writing, for example, like Roger is the first at the beginning of this movie, he's totally legit. Like, he's like zoned in. He is handling the situations extremely well, which I think is why Ken Foray and is actually likes him, is because, and why they team up, is because like he is doing good. So then like when he almost gets bit in the mall, then like that there's a change, and then he starts getting really reckless, and then you're like, this guy's being stupid. And George Romero did that on purpose to have the one person that you thought was going to be like straight laced for the entire time, then that he just is the first person who cracks and actually dies. And I was like, that is pretty cool. The first time I watched this movie, I didn't like Roger, but this time I actually really liked him. I thought he was good.
Oh yeah.
But the only, for sure. Watching it this time though, I was like, wow, Steven's a real douchebag. Like,
yeah, that's definitely pretty apparent. He has a little bit of a change, I'd say, in the middle of his story arc. And then he kind of goes back to, yeah, he didn't change. He was always that way. He has one of the coolest deaths though in the whole movie, for sure.
Hands down, he's the best zombie, hands down. Like, he is so good at being a zombie.
He is. He definitely stole the movie when he goes full zombie at the end. But I do want to throw in there too. I had heard this before, and I remember when I was watching it in the whole mall scene for the first time, just seeing, it's commentary on consumerism in America. Okay, that's fine. And watching it now, just seeing there's a lot of depth. I mean, we're just talking about a character and how, you know, how interesting his character arc was. I mean, all the characters, really.
Yeah.
I mean, Ken Foray's character is probably the most straightforward. I think he's probably the most consistent. But even Fran, especially, I mean, she's a very typical girl character in movies, not just, you know, horror movies, but even maybe kind of movies. I won't say in general, there were some strong female characters back then, but definitely in horror movies, she was just kind of the weak, in the way, dead weight kind of character. And then that really changes, and she grows and evolves and becomes a strong character.
And she's pregnant, like the whole movie.
Right.
Which is legit. Right. One thing I thought was cool, I wanted to address that real quick, was like, Ken Foray, though, at the beginning, you're not sure like what's going on with him, because he's kind of scary, because he's like really serious. And then he turns out to be like the most level-headed, like nice guy.
Oh, there you go. You're right.
And so that's pretty awesome. And then you're right with Fran, like that first scene when Steven does that, you know, jujitsu IKEA spin and totally tries it. She's just staring and like not doing anything. Then like her turning point is when after the Hare Krishna zombie almost gets her. And then she's like, gives that speech of saying like, I want to learn how to fly. Don't ever leave me without a gun. And I want to be 100% involved. Cause they're talking about like aborting her baby in the other room. And she's like,
right.
Then after that, she's like, no, I'm going to be in this conversation. You guys right. are not making choices for me. And then she's like part of the team after that, which is funny though, because Ken is like 100% with that, like all the time. He's like, dude, you're smart. Obviously you have some really good ideas. And Steven's like, why are you talking? He's like getting all mad. He's like throws a little fit and she's like,
he's got the biggest like little man syndrome. Like he's just constantly, you know, having to prove himself that I can hang with you guys. I'm just as tough. And it's just obviously not just a lot right. of compensating going on.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. Yeah. Dave, who's one of your like favorite characters in this movie?
I think it's probably Roger it's the most, I mean, from these characters, I think it's probably the most reasonable of what would happen from people who have grown to have like this, the kind of security that we have in like normal society and everything. You know, we all get a raised expectation of what we think we can do in a fight or whatever and stuff. And maybe you're lucky at the beginning and it doesn't get rough, but all of a sudden something crazy happens and you get rattled and your thoughts just don't make sense anymore and you start endangering people around you. Get trained now. Start right. prepping now, even if right. only in small ways. And be thankful that you have working plumbing and you can wash your hands freely.
For
anybody that experienced any sort of frozen pipes or anything crazy during this last winter, we can be thankful that plumbing works.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Dude, yeah, you're right. Because I was waiting for the power to go out in the mall, and then they have one throwaway line where they're like, "Oh, I think it's Well, they're like, I think it's on nuclear energy," and then like that's all you get for it. The mall never loses power.
Yeah,
right.
I think that's pretty interesting. But you're absolutely right though, because Roger is like, he's legit. Like the beginning, like the first scene you see him, he's talking to the rookie, and he's like, "Hey, you just follow me. Everything's gonna be fine." And then like that shocked me. It's like right out of the gate, that rookie just gets first shot, shot in the face. Yeah. And you're just like, oh, and then it's carnage after that for like the next 10 minutes. Like it doesn't let up. Okay. So the number one scene in this movie that gave me like literally like nightmares for like, I'm not hitting this movie.
The headshot?
No. Actually that was cool. But no, it's the part where the zombie like escapes the room and then his wife runs up to him and it's hey, and he looks at her and he's like, and she looks at him like, oh, wait, are you okay? And then he just leans forward and takes that chunk out of her shoulder.
Yeah.
Freaked me out. I couldn't hug anybody for weeks.
The bites. And I think part of it's that old school, you know, pioneering gore that Tom's you know, really made, you know, a career out of. It's it is kind of disturbing. I mean, it's like they're chewing on a chicken leg. I mean, it's thankfully nobody gets bitten that easy. You know, no human being can bite someone like that. Just the meat just fall off the bone. But it is disturbing. For as goofy and fake as just the gray makeup is for a majority of the zombies, I mean, when it comes down to the eating, it's intense. But yeah, the scene with the shotgun when they kick in the door and blow the head off, I mean, even by today's standards, that's impressive.
Right.
Yeah. That was some great special effects.
I was trying to look it up to confirm this. I can't confirm, but I think that's, if it's not the first, it's one of the first like head explosions on cinema, because Scanners came out 3 years later. And that's what most people think, like that's the big head explosion scene. But Tom Savini originally had built that head because everybody was supposed to die at the end of the movie. Like Ken was supposed to commit suicide. Fran was going to like stand up in the helicopter and her head was going to get like cut off. And then that would be the end of the movie. And then George Romero, as they were filming, fell in love with the characters. And he was like, we got to give some of them like some hope. And that's true, because it gets dark. Cause when Ken's like backing up and then he just, you know, he's just staring at all the zombies as they're filling up the room. And I was like, the first time I was watching it, I was like getting really depressed because I was just like, dude, they've been through all this. And then the G.I. Joe music kicks in.
Right. Like the A-team's here. Here we go.
And he inspires Mortal Kombat in one scene with the no shadow kick. Roof. He's like, cha-cha.
Yeah. But yeah, they really Romero addresses some, if not head on, he at least mentions, they're talking about suicide. I mean, you see suicide happen in this movie.
Yeah.
Even just that incredibly frank discussion of like, well, we could abort this baby.
Right.
And Ken's like, yep, I've done it before or something like that.
He's like, I know how.
And you're just like, holy crap, we're going there. Like this, that's nuts. Even though it was just a conversation. And then Romero's like, he's pretty big. I know he was kind of pioneering on having Black actors have these lead roles. I mean, even starting with Night of the Living Dead. And another thing Romero is really good about in his movies is, and especially in the early movies, but it's addressing race. He's really good at having, particularly Black actors have a real prominent, strong role, in his films, starting off originally with Night of the Living Dead. And then in this one with Ken Foray being the strong character he is all the way through. So you have, like I was saying a second ago, he's addressing a lot of heavy subjects inadvertently and directly in this movie. So there's kind of a lot to unpack and a lot to digest. I kind of feel like the more you watch it, the more you can really get out of this movie. It's not a throwaway zombie movie. There's a lot here, which is really cool. And that's not even talking about the filmmaking part of it. That's super fun. I mean, we haven't even talked about George Romero being a guerrilla filmmaker and a lot of the stuff that they did to get this movie made. Not to segue into a new topic, but I'm just saying.
No, you're absolutely right. Yeah. Before I drop some more trivia, Dave, what you got? Anything you want to address, talk about?
One of my favorite things about this movie is documentary that goes along with it. It's called Document of the Dead. And it covers the events of the filming of the Dawn of the Dead. And it's really awesome.
Yes. Did you get to watch it, Josh?
I don't know if that's the one. I remember I sent you a link to the one that I watched. Now, this one you're talking about, Dave, was this the one that they filmed while they were making the movie, or it came out at that time? Because the one I watched, I think, came out about 4 or 5 years ago.
Mm.
And it has filming footage, background footage going on, but it's a newer doc.
Yeah, I believe that's actually called Doc of the Dead.
Okay.
Naming convention sort of, I don't know how it follows exactly like that, but yeah, Document of the Dead came out in 1980, and it's basically footage from behind the scenes when they were shooting Dawn of the Dead. So yeah, it was filmed at the same time that the movie was being made.
Got it.
Yeah, I need to go back and watch that again.
I want to watch that as well. Is that on YouTube, Dave?
That one, I'm not sure. I have a copy of it. Maybe Santa will bring it to you guys for sure.
I've got it in the Ultimate Edition, which is pretty sick. I'll try to find that as well. See if I can find it. That was one thing I was annoyed about with Rubenstein, that like thankfully somebody ripped it on YouTube, but it's hard to find this movie. You can't really find it. I mean, even the copies of it on like the hard copies are hard to find and they're expensive. Dude, there's a 4K. Or I'm sorry, a Bluetooth copy of this movie, and it's like $150. And I was like, I like this movie, but not that much.
I'm
this movie has the infamous blue zombies in it, and apparently Tom Savini, he painted the zombies gray, but it appeared more blue, and so he was upset about that. And then he didn't like actually how the blood turned out on the coloring, which is funny though. I didn't know this. George Romero originally wanted this movie to be more comic booky than the first one. So the bright colors and all that stuff, if you think of it as a comic book film, totally works actually. And it's
dude,
like it makes it better. I was like, dude, I kind of want to watch it again this weekend.
Right.
Yeah. I thought that was,
there you go. Just more reasons to keep rewatching this film. There's just so many layers to it.
Yeah. No, there's so many different layers, like you were saying, because like most of the time people talk about just consumerism and stuff. But then like the first scene when they, I mean, you got some straight up like racism and then like versus cops and stuff like that. And that, right. And just how that
police brutality.
Yeah. And you're like, you'd love to say, yeah, that's just in this movie. But George Romero was famous in quoting saying, this isn't the future. This is actually now. There's just not zombies happening. And so if you look at these different situations, like they are happening all around, and it's just, and that's what I think makes the movie scarier too, is like in the first movie, people are reacting is like, what is this? And then the second movie, this one, it, which is a loose sequel, it's just a different time place of the same invasion, I guess I should say, is people are used to it now when they're not used to it. But they're like, everybody's trying to deal with it, but it's everybody's problem now. And they kind of know what it is, but they're still debating it on TV, kind of like today. And so it's pretty amazing how like they're just still doing that.
It's super relevant. It's crazy how that was relevant in the 70s and it hasn't changed. I mean, every decade and all these movies coming out, but even specifically this movie, it's really crazy how it's just dead on. A lot of the stuff that you see, you know, happen here in the world.
I mean, the scene is funny when the guy's like, hey, do you got a cigarette? And then like, they're like, nope. And then later they all light up. One guy referenced this and I thought this was a good point. It's like to show the almost the selfishness and depravity of just like the dude's just asking for a cigarette and everybody there is like, nope. And then like, they all have cigarettes and it's just a small token of human emotion. And I just thought like, it's funny, but at the same time, it's kind of like, how selfish are you going to get? To that wasn't even to save yourself. That was just a nicety. And so I just thought that was interesting. But and then you go to the opposite side where when the bikers show up in the movie, like they're throwing pies and stuff like that. Like they're so reckless and they're just like checked out. Like, I think that goes back to Roger being a critical character of just showing how people will just literally go Mad Max after a while of just like, this is just the new norm. It's just, there's no rules anymore. And so that would be the real fall of civilization, not the rise of zombies, but just the way people react in this situation.
Something that when I saw 28 Days Later for the first time, that was probably the first, not just zombie movie, but even horror movie that I really enjoyed. Like it kind of bothered me. It disturbed me, but at the same time, it spoke to me. And the thing that really stood out to me in that movie, and I think in most good, well, I can't say most good horror movies, cause that's depends on how you look at each movie, but the zombies aren't the bad guy necessarily. They're not the worst thing out there.
Right.
Other humans are terrifying. And you see that, in that movie in particular, like with the soldiers at the end, the people, the rescuers were actually worse than the problem.
Right.
And then in this movie, by the time you get to the biker gang crashing into the mall, you actually have empathy for these zombies that get killed, if you will. I mean, when they're getting picked on by the bikers and even, you know, fully killed, it's so weird how you just start to feel for the zombies and you just realize how awful humanity is in a way. So that's always what gets me a lot of times, is just that whatever this scary thing is, that's usually not the scariest thing in the world.
One thing I thought was interesting too was when Fran is in JCPenney's and she's waiting for the guys to get back with the car.
Yes.
And that zombie in the baseball outfit just like sits down and they're just staring at each other. It's such a sad moment. Like there's some straight up really depressing scenes in this movie. Like the just real quick, the one scene when they, Steven and her have the date and they're just like trying to make it work, but they're just depressed because they have everything that they need, but they don't really feel like they have a future. And then like, it shows them after having sex and they're just chilling there, it's such a blank look on their face. And it's just like, so sad.
So empty.
Yeah.
Also the scene with Fran and the nun, when the nun had her part of her habit was caught in the door, and instead of killing the nun or anything like that, she just lets her go and she just can't bring herself to do it. And I think that's maybe the first time in the movie where you start to feel for the zombies in a weird way. And you're just like, they're not trying to be evil. They're not trying to be, scary. That's just, that's just what they're programmed to do at this point.
Yeah. I think that was But just one more thing. I know I'm hogging the mic. Sorry. But like, I think that like that George Romero does explore this more in Day of the Dead and Land of the Dead, but just how the zombies are, they're sneaky in the case of like, they don't constantly look evil. They just look spaced. And then like when they attack, then it's just like, oh crap, I forgot. Like you guys are going to kill me.
Yeah.
And like, and then the, of course he doesn't hold back on the gore and you're just like, oh God. But yeah, it's just, it's different, but it's funny. It's like, I can't fault George for doing anything with the zombies because he created the genre, so he can do whatever he wants with it, you know, whatever he likes. Dave, what do you think about the specific type of zombies that George does as like the continuation in the process?
So if you had to, if I had to nail down my preference, I believe that the slow zombies are probably a lot more dangerous. They make for a lot more like creeping invasion of some force that is impossible to evade. It makes it impossible to ignore and to forget about it.
Right.
I think to add on to that, Dave, I think it also instills complacency in the whatever group of survivors, because you're always thinking, oh, I got a minute. They're just walking. I got a second. Yeah. And the next thing you know, like you said, this inevitable creepingness has just brought them to where you're cornered, or you trip on that rock, or whatever it is that you weren't paying attention to because, oh, they're just slow getting here.
Right.
Yeah. Slow and clumsy. I noticed last time watching this, like when you're shopping at the grocery store and people are standing too close to you and it can be difficult to get where you're going safely. Well, imagine if all of a sudden it was full of zombies instead, how much worse that would be. It takes a lot of the pressure off the day to day.
It does.
That's so important. That's so true. Well, George Romero, it's pretty cool. Like George Romero, Tom Savini, and then one of the producers, Forrest, I don't know his first name, but they said that like let me read this real quick. George notes that it was the first time he experienced writing something and then being totally blown away by the reality of it when it was being filmed was when the bikes were driving around inside the mall. Like the sound was just like overpowering. And so apparently that was freaking awesome. And it set off every alarm in the mall actually. That's pretty cool. Like the other thing too, about making this movie, we'll jump into the making of it real quick, is like, they had to be out by the mall. That was a functioning mall. So they had to be out by 10 o'clock every day, but they stopped filming at 6 because the music turned on and they didn't know how to turn it off. So they took a break around Christmas because they didn't want to take more time taking the Christmas decorations down and putting them back up every day. So that's when they filmed all the other stuff. But dude, I like, there's certain scenes where they're just wrecking shop in the mall. And I'm like, that's a real mall. Like that's a new mall. Do they have tire tracks in there? I know that there was some people that were extras that were dressed up as zombies that actually stole and crashed a golf cart into one of the the actual places and caused like $7,000 worth of damage. Ooh. Yeah.
I thought it was crazy too. I didn't realize that was a real bike gang. That was the Pagans.
Yeah.
Mm. Like, I mean, if they could have had the Hells Angels, they would have been there. I mean, it was not just a bunch of bike enthusiasts or just, you know, a bunch of guys that have bikes. I mean, that was a legit biker gang. So
yes,
that's kind of the scary thought to be working with on your movie. It's like, how's this going to go down?
Yeah, some very delicate negotiations.
Right.
Well, it's funny. They had a bunch of extras. And so like what they had is you get like a dollar and then you got a meal and you got a shirt that said I was an extra on Dawn of the Dead. And so like that's what they had for all the extras. And I mean, let's face it. Like I would love that. That would have been so cool.
Oh yeah.
Well, Dave, you were an extra in a movie. Like how would you feel?
Yeah. The movie was called Zombies, A Living History. We were in a makeup trailer for most of the day. It was air conditioned. That was very nice. But yeah, there were a lot of zombies that were having different appliances applied to their faces, you know, to create looks like a deformation and stuff. But it takes a long time for all of that to dry. And so the people who go through like the most intricate makeup that you see, it takes so long. So if you're really excited about the genre, and you're pretty good at mindfulness meditation. It could work out, but it's dedication.
Wow. Yeah. I mean, that makes sense why some people, they're in the chair for like 3 to 6 hours before they start shooting.
Yeah.
Oh man. That makes sense. Yeah. Let's see here. I'm trying to look real quick and see, I got a few more notes. I know we're getting close on needing to start shutting it down. Do you guys have final thoughts before we roll into our, final verdicts?
I think for sure. I mean, what a great concept to have them, you know, the mall be your spot to hold up in, during, you know, the apocalypse or whatever. I had with my friends, back in Sacramento, we had this discussion kind of when we were watching all these zombie movies. And we would talk about, you know, what's the best place to, you know, where would you hold up in a mall? And an airport was one of the top choices as far as, you know, easy to defend because you can have a wide perimeter that you can see. You can, you know, close off the lower levels and you can just live up top, potential to land aircraft or get out, you know, whatever you need to do in that regard. But yeah, super cool that they use the mall. And it's just kind of makes me a little sad that, you know, malls are disappearing. I mean, they're ghost towns in a lot of ways. I mean, I'm fortunate. I have a couple malls here in Nashville that are still pretty sweet with a sporting goods store. There's a Bass Pro Shop attached to the Opry Mills Mall. So that's where, when I found out they had to film the gun shop separate from the actual mall, I was like, well, this mall's got a gun shop, but
okay,
there probably we go. Tennessee for you.
Right. Dave, what your final thoughts on the movie before we run into verdicts?
Yeah, I think I'll double down on what Josh was saying. Enjoy your local mall. There's still a lot of interest and intrigue, and it's worth your time.
One thing I have written down here I forgot about was, I think for me, one of the coolest kills that I didn't see it coming. It was the helicopter kill where that dude stands up on the crates, the zombie, and then the blades just take the head or the part of his head
top of his head. Right.
Yeah. And just it super surprised me. And like in a good way, though, like I was like, oh, that's cool. Apparently that was one of Tom Savini's friends who had a notoriously low brow is what they said. So apparently top of his head was very short. And so because you see him and he's an odd looking guy because they have to like build up the prop on top of his head.
Right.
But, yeah, that was pretty funny.
I just had a random, I finished watching The Crazies the other day, which is, I think, the movie that he put out before this one.
Well, he did and Martin.
Oh, Martin. That's right. I forget about Martin. But The Crazies, which is not a zombie movie, but kind of similar, some sort of viral thing breaks out and people go nuts. It's kind of like zombies. But there's a doctor in that movie who is trying to discover the cure, and he's arguing with the authorities, you know, the army about, you know, I gotta figure this out, you know, let me do this. And turns out he is the guy, he's the doctor with the eye patch in this movie, who's also arguing that, you know, what they are and whatnot, which I thought was fun. Totally different guy because he dies in the first in the Crazies, but it's the same actor playing the same type of character, which is he's pretty noticeable just the way his voice is and even just the way he looks.
Logical. We must remain logical. Right.
That's right. Yeah. Speaking of The Crazies, the remake from 2010, if you ever wanted to unite around some problem and defeat it with your significant other, there's a really great teaming between Timothy Oliphant and I'm blanking on the actress's name, but there's a really cool chemistry that my wife and I enjoy during that movie.
Is that like awesome. Rada Mitchell or
that's
something?
That's
it. Like
that? Yep. That's right.
Yeah. She's fantastic. Yeah, I agree. I need to watch that movie again. That's a good one. That sounds like a real good Oklahoma right there. That's a good one.
That's a good
one. Yes, sir.
I like it.
Speaking of good ones, the one scene where they have the infamous intestine eating scene, those are actually real cow intestines. And apparently Tom Savini, he lived near a slaughterhouse and that's how he got the idea and probably got a discount. So yeah, that scene freaking grossed me out the first time I saw it. I was just like, oh, and I know like that's like infamous now because almost every zombie movie, you have to have an eating scene. And this one has a couple scenes like the when they're in the apartments in the beginning, like that scene is hellacious, you know?
Right.
But
yeah, it definitely holds up.
The final body count in this is 93. There's 17 humans died and 76 zombies. So not too bad. That was pretty good.
Nice.
Yeah. All right, let's roll into our final verdicts right now. So how we do this is we rate the movie four different ways. And we see, like, did it hit its mark when it first came out, or was it a bomb? Is it still relevant today? What's your personal enjoyment of it? And then is it a midnight watch, which means, like, what if there's a movie that's just on, you happen to be walking through the room and it's on the TV and you're just like, it totally captures your attention and you have to finish it. You know, like if you're like, do I go to bed or do I finish this movie? It's like, well, I have to finish this movie. It just totally captures my attention. That's a midnight watch. Now, Josh, like what he likes to do is he likes to be like, well, it depends on the scene. If it's this scene, I would watch this scene and then I'll go to bed. That's not a midnight watch.
It's not. I got to get firmer on that. I was very convicted. Jeremy called it out. And so instead of the midnight watch, he calls it the midnight Josh.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Where it's like, yes, it's a great scene, but you wouldn't watch the whole movie. Well, maybe we'll start a second podcast, The Midnight Josh. So, Dave, do you think that it hit its mark when it first came out in 1978?
Based on the numbers, it's tough to say.
Yes, very close call for sure. So we rated on from like A to F. What's your rating on that?
I'm going to go probably pretty close to C.
To a C? All right. Josh, what do you think?
I'm actually going to go with an A. Just based on the mask, it was kind of an indie film budget and they raked it in, and especially with overseas sales.
Yeah.
In Italy and everywhere else. I mean, Argento crushed it as far as, you know, getting it done over there. So I think just based on the box office, I would give it an A.
Yeah.
I gotta give it an
A+, honestly, because I agree. I think they killed it with the money wise. I mean, 500,000 to 66 million. That's a lot of money. It's it was a huge film when it came out at the time. Because it was unrated and not X rated, it avoided the video nasties list in England. So it didn't get censored in certain places. I mean, it got censored all over the place, but not as bad as like Evil Dead. Evil Dead got hit with an X rating, and so less people saw that. But
right.
Let's see. So is it still relevant today? Josh, why don't you answer that one first?
Sure. I think if we're going to look at this from the film industry perspective, I think it still definitely is relative today, and considering what everything is still, a lot of, you know, zombie movies to this day and programming and whatnot still takes its cues from this movie. And even some of the special effects and whatnot still hold up. I might be being a little generous, but I'm going to give it a B.
A B. Okay. All right. I'm going to, movie relevance. I mean, like, you got Shaun of the Dead, you got Juan of the Dead, you've got like everything of the dead has been coming out since this movie. And it was the second like massive, super influential zombie movie. And call me favoritism, but I got to give it an A for still relevant in horror movies, because it's a godfather of a film for the zombie genre. Like, it's like,
for sure.
Not is it only one of the first, but I personally think it's still one of the best. I think just watching the movie again now, I'm just blown away at it. This movie gets better for me personally, like every time I watch it. Dave, what do you think, Dave?
Yeah, I'm going to shoot for an A on this one. It's like you said, the Godfather. It wrote the book in a lot of ways for the modern zombie film, whether they run or not. Mm-hmm. I think in the same way that it's easy to appreciate the music and the way that it adds to dread, I think that the movie has a tone that's never really been replicable, if you will.
That's a good point. No, I totally agree. It's hard to put the tone of this movie into a box because it keeps fluctuating in the best of ways. Like, the beginning is horrific, and then it can get funny and you're relaxing and you're like, oh yeah. And I totally see what you're saying, Dave, where you're like, throw yourself into that situation. What would I do in that situation? And that's the fun part. You keep coming back to it.
I just got to tack on to that too. it's amazing that you basically got three movies out of this one movie as well. You got the theatrical cut, you had, you know, the uncut version, whatever. And then the fact that Argento was able to take and edit his own, cut his own movie as well.
Yeah.
Which is pretty spectacular. I forgot to say this in my closing notes, but just the fact that Romero did as many shots as possible of every scene. So he had as many choices as possible when he was putting this movie together. And that's so different from, like, say, the Coen brothers, who are laser focused on this scene is being shot this way. Then we're going to do this one this way and this way that way and kind of work our way through it. So looking at how much has come out of this one movie, it's pretty incredible.
Yeah, I totally, I thank you so much for bringing that up. I would have kicked myself if I forgot. I'm amazed at the editing in this film, because this movie came out in 1978. And you want to talk about, you know, people make fun of Taken 3, like how many shots does it take for Liam Neeson to climb over a fence? You know, it's like there's like 17 different shots for him to jump a fence. And so like in this movie, though, there is like thousands of cuts in this movie, and this was not edited digitally. This was edited old school. Like you got to cut it and line it up. I was like, just the more I watch this movie, like a lot of his flicks are like that, but this one is just like, it's so fast and it's consistently like moving like bam, 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 bam. And you're right. He doesn't have a lot of long shots, but his style is just like fast and frantic. And I think that's gotta be part of the guerrilla filmmaker's like style. Kind of pick up a camera and start running. But
All right.
Let's
jump. I think that segues directly into enjoyment of this movie.
Yes.
So Jeremy, how would you rank this one?
Oh man. I gotta give it an 8. A plus. Yeah. A plus. Yeah. I know. I honestly, I've been wanting to review this movie. This was one of the, I don't know, top five movies that we talked about reviewing. Dave, I know I talked to you last year about it. I was like, we got to review that movie. For me, A+, dude. Like, I know I just watched it a couple nights ago again. I've seen this movie probably like 8 times or something. And I honestly, if Aubrey was like, hey, you want to watch it on this weekend? I'd be like, yeah, let's go put Harper to bed and then we'll watch this movie. So A+. Yeah. What about you, Josh?
I'm going to go with a B. I'm not, I feel horrible for saying that, but no,
you
I really enjoyed
your
this.
Mouth. Yeah. No, I'm just kidding.
That's it. I quit. This movie is really, really fantastic. I was saying earlier, it just, the more you watch it, the more you like it. I think, at least that's how I feel about it.
Yeah.
If we were to review this movie again next year, I'd probably be at that A myself.
All right.
It's just incredible how many layers there are to this, no matter how you're watching this movie, whether it's, you know, for the social aspect of it or cinematically how it's put together or whatnot. It's pretty awesome. I'm already at a B+. I've already gone up. It's a B+.
There we go. It's a plus. Dave, what about you, man?
I would start by saying, what's the highest number of pluses you can have after the A or something? Whatever highest possible raising. I'll go with that one for this time. It's like a book that you read numerous times and you're still finding new things many times later. Yes, indeed.
That is a great way of explaining that. That's a good point.
Yeah. Very cool.
Yeah. I guess we'll call it A+².
There we go. I like that.
All right. Let's do run into our midnight watches then. Let's start with Dave. Dave, is this a midnight watch for you?
It is indeed.
Nice. Locked in. All right, Josh, make me happy. Is this a midnight watch or a midnight Josh?
Well, I'm gonna commit to no, it is not a midnight watch for me. And I'm just gonna stop there before I get myself in trouble on my midnight Joshing.
it's a midnight watch for me, hands down. Yeah.
Awesome.
Freaking love this movie. We gotta shut it down though. That wraps up today's episode. If you guys want to check out this movie, good luck. I mean, I have it on DVD. Where'd you guys watch this movie?
I watched it on YouTube, which thank you, Dave, for pointing that out. I think it was last year even you mentioned that. And it's nice. We can watch something this great for free.
Yep, definitely. Yep, indeed.
And Dave, where did you watch it?
YouTube also.
Nice. Yeah, fantastic.
That fan edit is really good.
I need to check that out. I'm excited to watch that. Special thanks to our sound producer, Jake Colvin. If you guys enjoyed this episode as much as we did, we'd love it if you shared it with your family, friends, and anyone that you think would like it.
That's right. And please subscribe, rate, and review our podcast. It's found on Apple, Spotify, YouTube, and just about every other platform. We'd also love it if you visit our Instagram or our Facebook page and join us in the conversation. And we have a hashtag going, What's Your Midnight Watch? And you can also directly reach us at themidnightwatchpodcast@gmail.com. And Dave, thanks, man, for coming on the show. We've talked about having you on the show, I think, before we had anybody else come on the show. So thank you, man.
Happy to be here. Yep. It's great to be a fan and to get to be on the show. The show is super awesome. Great work to everybody involved.
Thank you so much, man. And thank you for introducing us to the zombie genre and to this
flick. Oh, for sure.
Absolutely.
Hopefully we can get you back on here again. Maybe we can hit up Day of the Dead or something, work our way through.
Sounds great. Thanks so much. That's a good point.
Yeah, that's a really good point. Well, thank you guys so much. You have a fantastic week. And as always, keep up the watch.